Brett, sometimes I dream of becoming an actor. Have you ever dreamt of becoming an actor? Maureen, what is it you think I do for a living? Never mind, sounds like you need the New York Film Academy. NYFA offers workshops, BFA and MFA degrees and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, journalism and more, online and on campuses across the globe. To make films alongside industry professionals, explore more at nyfa.edu. Thanks, Brett. Thank you, Maureen.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase, every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City Branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Look out. It's only films to be buried with.
Hello and welcome to Films to be Buried With. My name is Brett Goldstein. I am a comedian, an actor, a writer, a director, a combine harvester, and I love films. As Mark Kane once said, the first step towards success is taken when you refuse to be a captive of the environment in which you find yourself. Just because there are no cinemas doesn't mean you can't turn off your phones, tell everyone in the house to shut the F up and pull the curtains to watch a movie properly, all right? Yeah, that's right, actually, Mark. Fair play. Every week, I invite a special guest over. I tell them they've died. Then I get them to discuss their life through the films that meant the most to them. Previous guests include Sharon Stone, Jameela Jamil, Raisin Connerty, and your favourite, Paddy Pambles. But this week, it is the wonderful and glorious Yvette Nicole Brown. So listen, I rarely do this, but there is a Patreon section, right, where you find extra stuff. You go to patreon.com/Brett Goldstein. But the Patreon section of this particular episode is so special that I am including it in the main podcast. Just don't tell the Patreons or they'll be like, what the fuck? Also, it's just really good. I can't keep it. Do you know what I mean? It's got to go out. But if you'd want to head over to the Patreon, you still get extras there. You'll get a full uncut video of the episode and all sorts of other stuff, including all the old episodes, ad-free, extra stuff, blah, 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 all that. You know what I mean? Just have a look over at patreon.com/Brett Goldstein. Your TV homework, as always, watch Ted Lasso Season 1 on the Apple TV Plus app and watch Soulmates on Amazon Prime. One will make you happy, the other will make you question your relationships. There's one for each mood, really. Yvette Nicole Brown is an incredible multi-hyphenate. You know her from all the things, including Community and Avengers Endgame. And she and I recorded this over Zoom about a month ago, I think. And my goodness, she was a pure delight. I think you are really going to love this one. It's very special. So that is it for now. I very much hope you enjoy episode 137 of Films to be Buried With. Hello and welcome to Films to be Buried With. It is me, Brett Goldstein, and I am joined today by an actor, a podcaster, a presenter, a animated hero, an avenger, a lover, a fighter, a hero, an inspiration, and the greatest host that I have ever had the pleasure to be hosted by. Please welcome to the show the wonderful, the amazing Yvette Nicole Brown!
That was my Muppets, my Kermit the Frog scream. I want you to write my obituary.
Oh, I already have. No spoilers. Have you?
Okay, I mean, not that I want you to outlive me, because I'd love to live a long life. But if I happen to go before you, can you just write it for me?
Yes, I will. I will. And let's hope. Okay. Let's hope you're around for many years to come.
I would love that.
It would be terrible if you were to die so soon. It is an absolute delight to have you. I'm so happy to have you on here. Thank you. For those of you who don't know, I'd never met Yvette before. And we've had to do, it's a lovely thing.
It was a lovely thing.
We've been asked to do a number of Q&A as a team, as a cast, as a crew. And then we had to do one with you and you moderated it. And I swear to God, for about a week afterwards, we were still talking about it, because whatever you did to us, it was like we'd gone away to camp with you And you got us bonding around a fireplace. Like all of us were so emotional by the end of it. I don't know what you did to us, but it was like you made us better. You made us stronger. You made us tighter. And you made us open, big open hearts. I don't know what you did.
That makes me so happy because you know what's so funny? I knew you were like about to go in to do your second season. So if I helped, you know, knit this amazing group of people even closer together, that it will be a badge of honor. And I'd like that added to my obituary, please.
Hold on, let me just make a note.
You're going to make a note, right? Put it down that, that I also did that. I made
you really
happy
did. It
people
was quite magical.
Happier. Loving people, more loving. That would make me so happy.
Yeah. Now tell the people that don't know, when you listen to this, we're in a pandemic. Sorry mm-hmm. to put that out there. But you've been working, right? You're working, you're managing to work in this environment. And how is that all going?
You know, it's been a little bit scary. I'm a liar. I'm not normally a liar, but I just lied right then. It's been very scary. You know, for the first part of the pandemic, we were still on set shooting Big Shot for Disney Plus. And then, you know, everything shut down in LA. And then, you know, I kind of became an inside person and I was like, okay, I'm just going to do podcasts and Zoom panels, and I'm going to do voiceovers. And I just kind of decided that I guess I'd never leave my house again. Now, I'm already an introvert. Some of my friends call me the brown recluse. So it was like suited to who I was until like it started opening back up and I had to go back in the world. And I was like, am I agoraphobic now? Like, do I have a fear of being on set? And, you know, I realized I got a touch, I got a smidge. So now when I have to go do something, I'm like, what's the best mask that I can wear to set before I have to take it off and be totally, you know, unprotected and just, you know, all the COVID tests and Zycam swabs, and it's been a lot, but I'm grateful for work. I don't want to sound like I'm not happy that I have jobs, but
no,
scary.
I really relate to that. I had like one of my first days on set recently, and one thing I hadn't, as it was fucking amazing, I was so happy to be there. For God, I'm so grateful I get to leave the house. However, just the fact that at one point I was stood somewhere where there were 50 people. And we were, you know, everyone was talking and I was like, I have not been near more than two people in a year. Do you know what I mean? Like,
But no mask too. Like it's, I've talked to people, like I've had friends that have come by and stood like on the street and I've been on my front stoop and we've kind of yelled at each other through masks. But when you get on set and they're like, okay, let's take those shields and masks off. And you realize that this is the first time you looked at a person's face and let their breath hit your cranium in a year. It's very scary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So weird, isn't it?
It is.
But fuck, it's good to have something to do.
It is. And that's the introvert a year later speaking. I actually can go a long time by myself. It's a gift. It's a gift of mine.
That is a gift. Do you when you're doing, because also you're very clearly a is this the word? A radiator. You're a radiator, right? Do you know this theory?
No.
Some people are I don't know what the opposite of a radiator is that takes in heat.
The energy of the heat.
You're a radiator, it seems to me. You radiate love and energy and whatever. And so when you do that, do you, at the end of the day, like, I need to fucking lock myself in a closet
Leave. Like this is how I know, though, that someone or something is my assignment. Like I always have known that I am an encourager of people and a champion of people. And even being an introvert, I love people. So that's the battle that I'm always fighting, because in my nature, I want to be by myself. But I always say this, I find people to be delicious. I just think that their weirdness and their little faces and their little moods and attitudes and their joys, like all of it is so great to me that I'm drawn to it. Right. But I also realize that everybody and everything is not my assignment. So when I am assigned to something, when it's something that I feel like God said, this is where you're supposed to walk, this is who you're supposed to talk to, this is what you're supposed to do, I have like this supernatural energy and I could do it all day. That was like my conversation with you guys. It was just a divine gathering of souls in that day, right? Yeah. So after that, I could have climbed a mountain. But then sometimes you're talking to some people and it's an energy drain. Like it wasn't what I was supposed to be doing. It wasn't where I was supposed to be. They weren't who I was supposed to be talking to. And when that is over, I'm like in the bed for like 2 days trying to get myself together. So it all depends on whether it's an assignment or not.
I totally, fully, totally get this. So sometimes people are like, God, you're like, you seem depressed. What happened? You're like, I just talked to the wrong people and I shouldn't have. I followed. Yeah,
I just spent a day with some really, some soul draining people. And I don't even think they intend to be that. I just think that there's some people, like, maybe it's your radiator theory. There's some people that vibrate at a higher vibration than other people do. And some people give. And their lives are outward facing, and then some people's lives are inward facing. And the inward facing people tend to suck a little bit of the life force from other people. They don't intend to, I hope. I hope it's not sinister. It's just the way that they're set up. So you have to protect yourself if you're someone that pushes out. You have to make sure that you're not getting sucked dry.
Is it something that you kind of nurture? And what I want to know is this sort of instinct where you go, God has led me to this thing. Mm-hmm. And when it's right, it feels so right. And then occasionally you get it wrong and you arrive at the thing and you go, oh, no, this is definitely not. Is it just something you cultivate, that instinct, that sort of
the divine, knowing?
Follow this? Yeah.
You know what? It's funny. Because I grew up poor in East Cleveland, I have this part of me that's like, make the money. So there's a lot of times when it's a work thing, I say yes. And then I get there and go, why did I say yes to this? Right. Mm-hmm. And so in those instances, I wasn't able to glean whether this was going to be helpful for my spirit, but I made the decision because, you know, I wanted to stack some cash for a rainy day. Now, when that situation happens, you suck it up and you just handle it. But if I walk into something that I'm not being contractually required to stay in this space and it's funky, I go, you know what? It was great meeting you, but I'm going to get on out of here. So if I can't ascertain the situation before I get in it, I will extricate myself quickly if it's something that I know is going to suck me dry.
Have you always been this way? Are you very sensitive to others?
Always. Yeah. Always. There's Since certain people, little. This is going to sound spooky, but there's certain people, like, I won't even look them in the eye. Like, if I see someone and it's funky, I won't hug them. Well, none of us can hug right now, but when we could hug, I won't hug them. I won't look them in the eye. And I'm a hugger. So if I'm not coming towards you like this before the pandemic, I didn't see something on you. I didn't see, you know, no judgment, but there's something that I'm going to leave with you. I ain't taking none of it with me. So I can kind of tell if someone is not, you know.
No judgment, but I think you're evil. No judgment.
Like, listen, hey, do your thing. Rock on with your bad self, literally. But just not for me. Just not how I dance through life. So,
I totally get it. People have vibes. And
they do. You know this.
Sometimes you're like, I can't be around this person, and they've done nothing wrong.
Yeah,
they've not actively done anything wrong, but you're like,
no,
you're making me feel
it's just
Ill.
A vibe. It's a vibe, and also there's some people that have the vibe, and sometimes they just need a little loving. They just need a bit of you to see them, right? I feel like everyone in life just ultimately wants to be seen, right? They just want someone to know that they exist, right? And then the people that have spent their lives with that desire and no one's seen them in a way that they can feel, they tend to be a little curmudgeonly or a little rough around the edges. And the sad thing is most people avoid them because of that. And so it reinforces, it's like a circle. They're not seen. So they're, you know, and so sometimes when I see those people, I'm not repelled by that because I can see that crusty little exterior is just, they just need a little bit, you know. It's kind of like your character on Ted Lasso, you know what I mean? He's a good man that has this crusty exterior, and those with eyes to see can see the goodness and the love in him no matter what he says or does. And once somebody just loves on him a little bit, he turns into a Muppet. That's right.
Yeah.
That's true, I think, for every curmudgeon.
I think I've talked about this on here before, so apologies if I've said this before, but the thing of, sometimes I really take against someone for no reason, but like, as in, I don't know the person. Perhaps we're at the gym together, or whatever. There's someone there, and I'm like, oh, this guy, I hate this guy, and I'll be like, why? Like, nothing's happened, but there's a vibe, there's something,
right?
And then I force myself to go, no, look, you need to find the love here because everyone's a person, and eventually I'll see something, and it'll always be a glimmer of something, which is basically that everyone is a little kid inside. Everyone is a little kid that just wants to be loved. And some people hide that so well. But it's all there. Sometimes think that's true of everyone.
And this is the thing too, though. Like, and even in saying that, you'll know that it's your assignment because you'll have a heart for doing it. you should never love begrudgingly. It should never be like, oh, I'm going to go over here and love this person. That's not how you do love. It needs to be like, this person's difficult, but I kind of want to talk to him. Like, it should feel like that. You know, I want to see what's there. You'll have a heart. The things that you're supposed to dip a toe in, you'll have a heart for.
And so you think when you don't feel that way, when you feel like, I'm just walking out of here, I'm leaving this, it's like someone else.
It's someone else's assignment. You know what I mean?
And the thing is,
yeah, there's a lot of people that are supposed to help people. You know, like Mr. Rogers always said, look for the helpers. I do believe that I'm one of the helpers, and that's not coming from a place of arrogance. It's just I love people, and that's one of my gifts. So I know that I'm one of the helpers, but at the same time, even Jesus didn't help everybody, right? I have my people that I'm supposed to help, and there's other helpers that have their people they're supposed to help. And you know, you don't help yourself or ultimately anybody else if you have drained yourself. Like when you're on an airplane and they say, put your oxygen mask on first. Like, you have to make sure that you have enough to give. And so if you don't feel that someone's your assignment, you're playing yourself and them if you step in anyway. That's the way I feel about it.
Love it. Love it. Yvette Nicole Brown, I've forgotten to tell you something.
What did you forget?
And it's really stupid that I didn't tell you. And now I've remembered, I feel bad that earlier you said about...
Don't feel bad.
Because I feel like I was about to tell you and then it slipped my mind. When you said, I want you to write my obituary, and I said, oh, I already have.
Yes.
The reason I had, and I should have said this.
Yes.
I should have said it at the time. I'll just say it.
Pull off the bandaid.
You've died.
Oh, doggone it. You know...
Dang it. I'm sorry.
It had to happen someday, Brett. I didn't know that it had happened, but I figured someday.
But for the record, it's a hell of an obituary.
Damn, it's beautiful. It's the best thing I've ever written. It's saying a lot because you write Ted Lasso, so that's saying a lot if it's the best thing you've ever written.
Well, God bless you, but you wait till you see this obituary. Not a dry eye.
I can see it from heaven. Okay, go.
Tell me, how did you die? How did you die?
You know, I believe that I died peacefully in my sleep after a very long and loving life of joy, great adventures, good friends, and finally a husband. They just went to that sweet, sweet slumber and woke up talking to the Lord.
How old were you when this happened? What's your dream age of dying?
I imagine if it's a long life, I think I'd at least make it to the late 80s.
Oh, I'd push beyond that.
You think, should I go 97?
If you're in good health and good brain and all that,
if I'm still intact, I would go mid to late 90s. Just about to kiss 100.
I'd be annoyed though if you got to 99 and die. I'd be annoyed because you want to get your card from the Queen.
Let's go to 100 then. Let's go to 100. But not much beyond.
You get the card, your birthday card from the Queen at 100.
Yes.
And then you open it, you read it, you go, that wasn't it. It was cracked up to me.
and our version of that in America is we get to be on a Smucker's label, I think on the NBC, the Today Show. Yvette made it to 100 label. I'll take it.
What's Smucker's?
Smuckers is a delicious jelly. It's a delicious jelly. Oh, it's so good. Smuckers is so good. I think the freaking slogan is, with a name like Smuckers, it has to be good.
With a name like Smuckers, it has to be good. Also, Yvette Nicole Brown reached 100 today. That's how their adverts go.
Yes.
Do you worry about death? Is it something you think about a lot?
You know, I used to think about it a lot. Not so much the idea of death, because, you know, I just feel like there's more, that there was something before and after. So it's not that part. It's the how. I don't do things that could lead to it. Like anything that could lead to it being bad. Like, I don't go into large bodies of water. I don't like flying over large bodies of water. I've done it, but something about it. I don't bungee jump. I don't, you know, I don't ski, don't fence. I don't accept duels.
So you worry, but then you stopped worrying. Why have you stopped worrying?
You know, because real life became so perilous with COVID. And, you know, we had Donald Trump for a while. And then there's been racial unrest here and just so many other things. I was like, I can't worry about dying and worry every single day about living. Like, I have to just let one of them go. So I decided to put all of my energy and worry into living.
I love that. That's nice. Right? And what about afterlife? What do you think happens when you die?
I think you go back to where you came. I think that there's more. I think there was more before we came here, and I think there's more after. You know, I don't even know how to live my life not believing that there's a grander plan for all of us. Like, this idea of we came from nothing and we go back to nothing just seems like the most colossal waste of the spirits that I've met. You know what I mean? The people that are so full of everything, it just goes to nothingness. Just, I don't believe that. I believe that there is an afterlife, and you know, I'm trying to get to it, I'm trying to get back to it. Cause I think we start there and then we come here and we dabble and try to figure some things out. And then we go back and talk about what we learned.
Yeah.
And then maybe get another go. I don't know. Maybe you get up there and God's like, how you feel? What? Almost got it. I was close. Yeah. Like, you want another go? Give me another go. Let me try. I can do better this time. Let me get down there again. I had a conversation with a friend of mine about this once. And I was like, just imagine that we are these beings. And God says to us, there's so much down there. There's heartbreak. There's love. There's joys, triumphs, all these great things. And you get to experience as much of it as you want. You get to choose your adventure down there. And I was telling my friend about this in the sense of there's so much sadness and hard things happening. What if we looked at it like we are these eternal beings, and instead of it destroying us, we said, I get to experience heartbreak too?
Yeah.
Like, what if it was that? Like, this feeling of it's just another experience of being alive. And yes, it rips your heart out and makes you feel horrible, but oh, the richness of the experience of it. If you're a being that marvels at experiences and feeling things and emotions, why not come down here and just, you know, get your heart stomped on 50 times, or, you know, pull yourself back from the brink of bankruptcy or sickness or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
Why not?
I can't remember where this came from, but someone told me that for a month to try saying thank you to everything. So you're saying thank you, but even terrible stuff that's happening, you go, thank you.
Yep.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And it's that is the thing. You start to go, oh, I'm getting to experience everything. It's all an adventure.
Yeah.
Even the negative feeling stuff is an adventure. Oh, look, I'm experiencing this. Thank you. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. What would happen if we did that? Like, if everybody just kind of took that mindset that it's a journey.
Mm.
I'm on the journey and I'm going to celebrate just the gift of being able to be on the journey. The journey is the thing. Yeah. Like, does it really, when you get down to it, does it really matter what it is when it's really, when you think about the totality of just the gift of being able to live?
Mm.
Like, just some mornings I go outside and the air is so clean or so beautiful. And I'm just breathing the air like, you know, wow, like this is so a beautiful day.
Yeah.
Like, what a joy to see this sunrise and smell this air and hear that particular bird. And to be in this space and time where I got to have this exact experience. Wow.
Yeah.
Like, what if you went through life with a sense of wonder? You know what I mean? That would be everybody's life, which you would change everybody's life and everybody would change yours for the good. Right?
Yeah. Let's do that. I mean, you're already doing it.
Let's do that, Brett. I'm trying. I'm every day I'm doing my best.
I got some news for you. There is, there's a heaven. There's a heaven. You're in. You made it. Quite easily.
I made it.
Quite easily. There was very little discussion. there wasn't a lot of controversy. It was like, yeah, she gets in.
Good, and good.
It's got all your favorite stuff there. What's your favorite thing?
It changes a lot, Brett. I would say right now it's potatoes.
It's mostly made of potatoes. Seven.
Mostly made of potatoes.
Potato waffle really chairs, potato.
Yes, man.
Potato
all
leg
rest. And salt it just right.
Yeah. You can eat every. It's just, it's a potato heaven.
Right.
But they want to talk to you. They want to hang out with you. They also want to leave you alone when you want your space. But what they want to know is they want to know about your life through film. And the first thing they ask you is, what is the first film you remember seeing, Yvette Nicole Brown?
You know, it's interesting. The first film I think I ever saw in my life was one or two. because I can't remember if I saw one in the theater and one at home, like on like cable or something. Mm-hmm. But The Wiz.
Oh, wow.
Is the first, like one of the first mental images of film mm-hmm. that I have. And the second is a really random movie called Claudine with Diane Carroll and James Earl Jones. And it is, it's a woman with like, she has like six or seven kids and James Earl Jones plays a garbage man and it's their love story. And the reason I don't know if it was that one, because it came out when I was really young or not born yet. So I know that there's, unless I saw it in my mama's womb, there's very mm-hmm. little chance that I saw that in a theater, and we didn't get cable until I was a lot older. So I think it was The Wiz, which was magical and amazing. And Michael Jackson.
And you saw that, this is you seeing this on TV or at the cinema?
I think I saw The Wiz in the theater. Like, I feel like my experience of The Wiz was so expansive that it had to have been in a theater. And cause I remember it in color. I remember seeing it in color and all the wonder of that and seeing so many Black people dancing and singing and, you know, it was Diana Ross and Nipsey Russell and Quincy Jones did the music and Michael Jackson. And it was such a experience that I'm pretty sure that was the very first film I ever saw in a theater.
Wow.
Yeah.
And where was that? Where were you growing up again?
East Cleveland. East Cleveland, Ohio. Yeah.
And do you have brothers and sisters or was it just you?
I have an older brother.
Do you think, how much older is he, Maya?
He's a year and a half older.
So would he have been with you at The Wiz? Was this a whole family?
I'm pretty sure. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was a family outing because he and I were both really young. So it had to be a family outing. And we didn't have a lot of family outings because my mom was a single mom and she worked hard and we weren't like destitute or anything. Mm-hmm. But it was the kind of childhood where sometimes you would have a birthday gift. Sometimes your birthday gift would be socks and underwear, which we were happy to get. Sometimes there would be a Christmas gift. Sometimes it wasn't. Mm-hmm. And we just understood that. You know, it's finances. Yeah. You know, my mom was very honest with us about that stuff. So I'm pretty sure that The Wiz is the kind of movie where she was going to save and splurge for us to
this
see something.
This was a big deal.
It would be it was a big deal.
I love that. Mm-hmm. What's the film that scared you the most? Do you like being scared?
I do not like being scared. And it's so funny because I am such a huge fan of The Walking Dead and that whole television show is just about being scared. So I don't like being scared. I just love great stories. This movie that scared the bejesus out of me, and to this day it does, is Poltergeist.
Oh, great.
And this is why, Brett, like, because I saw other scary movies. Like, I saw The Omen, and I saw The Exorcist, and those killed me. Nightmare on Elm Street, all of those. But there's something about Poltergeist. It happens in your house.
Yeah.
And it happens through your television. And it happens because something happened on the land your house is on before you even moved in. So you had nothing to do with what's happening. You don't understand what's happening and you don't find out why it's happening until you almost die. So everything about that, you know, to this day, it's just, you know, scary. Poltergeist was really, really scary.
Poltergeist is really scary. And it was a PG. That is mad.
Was it a PG?
It was a PG when it came out. It is mad. I don't think it is a PG now. I think they re-rated it.
They had, come on, it's got to be an R now because the guy just pulling his face off, the doggone steak that moves across the counter and all the stuff bubbles out, the doggone tree, the clown, the doggone life form coming out of the closet. There's so much stuff that destroys children. I can't imagine that it's PG.
Yeah.
I can't. Pool with all the skeletons popping up. And
What do ghosts want in those films? They're trying to kill us so they can hang out with us? That's what I wonder. What do the ghosts want?
I figured they wanted to be, they wanted their legacy to be honored. And they were angry that somebody just took over their sacred burial ground and just put up a complex of beautiful homes. But still, they didn't know how beautiful the homes would be. Yeah. They just wanted to be left in
peace.
Eternal slumber and peace. And I get it. Like, I understood what the story they were trying to tell, like capitalism over morality, which is what we fight every day in America for sure.
Yeah. What is the film that made you cry the most? And do you cry? Are you a crier?
I am a crier. I cry from joy more than sadness in films. Like, something will move me and I'll cry. But the movies, I have a couple for most of these answers because I just love films. So The Notebook made me cry, the ugly cry. love does it for me. Love in all its forms. Terms of Endearment made me cry, the ugly cry. Beaches
made
me cry, the ugly cry. And then The Way We Were. Just first of all, I want Barbara Streisand and Robert Redford to only ever work together because that film is so perfect. And when people, especially in love stories, when people can't seem to get it together, and everyone watching can see that they're supposed to be together, and then they just can't seem to work it out, that breaks my heart. Mm. That makes me just, and in the films when they never make it, it's heartbreaking. And in the films when they do make it, it's the happy tears. So
yeah. Lovely. Well, you got to pick one of them.
I'm probably going to go with The Notebook just because it was so hard for them to get together. Mm. And then they got together. And then he loses her because of dementia. But then the beauty of, I hope I'm not spoiling this for anybody. Spoiler alert. The fact that they ultimately end up together.
The end is like 51st Dates in a way. He just has to every day remind her, tell her
her
love story. 51st Dates is like a comedy notebook, isn't it? Thinking about it.
It is a comedy notebook. Yeah. It is. Yeah. I love the mystery element of The Notebook too, because you catch on pretty soon into the story that's the older couple is the younger couple, but just the idea of how they got there and their whole story is just so beautiful. I love that film.
Lovely. Mm-hmm. What is the film that people don't like, generally not acclaimed, critics don't like it, but you think everyone is an idiot and it's a really good film and you love it?
I don't feel like you guys told me that I couldn't choose this. It might be something that I shouldn't choose, but I want to choose it because I love it so much. I know every line from it and I have a sneaking suspicion that you love it too. Something tells me, first of all, I feel like you and I are kindred anyway, because the Muppet poster alone says it, but I'm going to say this film and I think that you love it too. And if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. Grease 2. Grease 2. See?
Say no. Come on. More.
This man, come on. We could do the whole podcast on it. I feel that you're kindred with me, right? You feel
flawless.
The same way.
Flawless film.
Flawless.
The best Grease.
There is no
The best Grease.
The best Grease. I don't care what any
Hey.
I don't even know what to say.
Where do we even start with the politics? The sexual politics. Look, Grease 1, the lyric we all sing. People sing at karaoke. Did she put up a fight? What on earth is going on?
What on earth is going on? And that's okay.
We move over to Grease 2. I want to be better for her. I want to be a good enough man that is worthy of her. Not
of her.
She'll just dress up like me.
Come on and turn herself into who I need her to be for her to get my love. Woo. You want to talk about the songs? All the songs are hits.
You want to talk?
Every single song
every
is a hit.
Every single one a banger. And you know what? When you're little, you think charades is boring. And then you get older and you realize it's fucking deep.
And then you get older and you realize it's beautiful.
It's a beautiful song.
It's beautiful song. I swear. I Cool Rider.
Has he lost the real him? It is magnificent. And also...
Go, Brett, go.
Michelle Pfeiffer, her first film, Get Out of Town. That is...
I don't know if it was her first. No, because she was in Scarface. It's the first one that resonated. It's the first one that resonated.
That is a movie star right there. Arriving.
Maxwell Caulfield in his prime. Together, the love...
She has an internal monologue on stage that people hear and connect to because it's so powerful.
First of all, the whole freaking talent show was amazing. Yeah. And the fact that everything panned back so she could talk about turning back the hands of time.
Yeah.
What? Yeah. Grease 2. And I don't care if anybody else ever chose it. It is an unsung gem.
It is a masterpiece. It doesn't put a foot wrong.
It doesn't. It really doesn't.
One of the lyrics in Grease 2 is, there's a female butcher at the lunch and meat display.
Yes! Everything.
Come on.
Keep going. Don't. Why are you stopping? Why?
Because I want you to sing.
Where does the pollen go? I'm going to leave you with that.
Tell me a song that teaches you about reproduction better than reproduction.
Than reproduction. There is not one. And the whole scene, every scene, every snippet in that one song as they go around the room, everyone talking about the pregnancy, like it's all just, I can't, I'm getting just excited just talking about it. Just, yeah. I love it so much. And I don't meet a lot of people that understand the beauty of Grease 2. So the fact that you are meeting me here in my joy makes me very happy.
I love Grease 2.
Love it. I love Grease 2.
This is so, one of the many reasons you were straight in the door at heaven, by the way. They looked over your record.
Back at you. Yeah. Back at you. She likes Grease 2.
Grease 2, she's in.
She likes Grease 2. Oh, God, I love that movie.
On the other end of the scale, what is the film that you used to love, but you've watched it recently and you've gone, oh, this doesn't hold up for me for whatever reason? You might have changed. Your feelings about the film have changed, you know, any reason like that.
First of all, the star of this film is one of my favorite actresses. I feel like she is unsung and she will make it onto the playlist later on in our conversation in another slot. Sandra Bullock in The Net. Now, this is a film that people may not. How do you know I was going to say that? You know, I'm telling you, we're the same person, Brett.
Because you said Sandra Bullock and I was like, yeah, The Net. Here we go.
The Net. First of all, every movie Sandra Bullock has ever done, I've seen and or own. And really, I think I own every single one of them on DVD. The Net used to be one of my favorites because it was such a taut little thriller. Mm-hmm. And she, this sweet girl is caught into all this problem and she can't prove that she's who she is. And now it would never work. It would just never work now because everything about social media now is we all have our pictures and we're verified and we, you know, there's no way that you could have an entire world that no one could prove that it was you.
Yeah.
You know, it just could never happen, but it's still a fun ride if you just, you know, turn your brain off on that part of it.
Yeah. It's a ballsy thing to make a film called The Internet and for it not to be instantly dated and sort of embarrassing.
I know.
The web.
It's a great film though.
Yeah.
It's still a good film.
It's still
film.
Fun. You know what? It's fun.
I don't know a lot of people that've seen The Net too. I think our DVD catalogs or our Netflix queues would be kind of the same.
We've got the same algorithm.
I think the Venn diagram would be just a circle.
Maureen, what's this I hear about you going to film school? I am. I want to gain valuable skills while making films and developing my creativity. So I'm attending the New York Film Academy. I'm thinking about becoming one of them people that writes the numbers on the title board. NYFA is a very respected film school. I hear they offer a variety of options to meet your educational goals, whether you want a BFA or MFA degree or want to learn at a quicker pace with a short-term program. That's right. They've got workshops and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, cinematography, screenwriting, producing, game design, musical theatre and more. Are you attending in New York? Might do. They have multiple campuses in some amazing locations like New York, LA, Miami, Italy, Australia and online. And you can learn more about the New York Film Academy at nyfa.edu. That's nyfa.edu. Thanks, Maureen.
Apple Card is the perfect cashback rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/card calculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
Now, Yvette Nicole Brown, what is the film that means the most to you? Not necessarily the film itself is any good, but because the experience you had around seeing it that will always make it special to you.
This might be a little on the nose, but I have to go with Avengers Endgame, and this is why. Mm-hmm. I had a cameo in Avengers Endgame, and they shot Avengers Endgame and Infinity War at the same time. They shot both scenes from both films over a span of like a couple years. Mm-hmm. And I am friends with the Russo brothers. They executive produced and directed Community, a show I did. And they were kind enough to bring some of us in to do cameos in the Avengers film. So we all were just kind of always waiting for the call to finally come. So when the call finally came for me, I was shooting an ABC show called The Mayor. And thankfully, Disney and Marvel and ABC are all under the same umbrella. So it worked out where I could fly to Atlanta to do it. Now, I went to do it while they were shooting Infinity War. So I thought I was in Infinity War. I signed an NDA, couldn't tell anybody I was in Infinity War, but I knew I was in Infinity War. My swag was Infinity War. My little backpack they gave me said Infinity War. I'm in Infinity War. So when Infinity War came and went and I was not in it, I was like, well, I'm on the cutting room floor. So then here comes Avengers Endgame and everyone's talking about it. They're all excited about it. And I'm a Marvel fan, so I'm excited about it. And I have a group of you know, I told you in the chat we did with Ted Lasso about my blurred group, these black nerds. And we all love Marvel and comic books and all this. And so we made a plan as a group to go see Infinity War as the blurred brunch group. And I didn't know I was in it. So I'm sitting with my greatest friends watching Avengers Endgame. And they're going to the 70s. And I'm like, in my mind, I'm like, wait a minute. I was in the 70s scene. What's happening? They show an elevator. I'm like, oh my God, what's happening? And next thing I know, my face pops up on the screen. My friends go crazy. I go crazy. The crowd goes crazy. And it was just like a moment that you could not plan because it was just so, it was such a surprise for me, for them. For the poor people in the theater didn't know why this whole row was losing their mind. So I'm going with Avengers Endgame for that. I will never forget the feeling of realizing I made it in with my friends around me. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, that's so wonderful. That's wonderful for all the reasons. And also it's like you, whatever your background, wherever you started with, you are watching yourself in the biggest film of all time.
Of all time. It's crazy.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And I Forrest Gump my way into it. Like, it's ridiculous. A lot of my life is me Forrest Gumping my way into things. It's ridiculous.
Really good answer. What is
Thank you.
The film you most relate to?
Oh, this is where Sandra Bullock makes her second appearance.
Hello, Sandra. Welcome back.
Hi, Sandra. Welcome back. I want to work with you one day. I think this is the greatest, and I'm, you know, listen at me. We can debate it. I think it's the greatest romantic comedy ever. And I know that there are other wonderful ones, but for me, While You Were Sleeping is my favorite because that character, Lucy, is me. Like I get crushes all the time. I'm the one that's like, will see a guy and just be like, if he just met me, like if he just met me and like, you know, broke up with, I think there's a line which is, well, there is a line where she says, and broke up with the supermodel he's currently dating and chose me, like we would just be in love. Like I have this mind where I'm just like, that's the guy. And, you know, usually the entirety of my life, it has not been the guy, but it was her guy. Like, he wasn't her guy, but the brother was her guy. So I love that her hopeless romantic mindset ultimately led her to the love of her life. And the girl that is crushing, the one that doesn't get the guy, got the guy, a guy. I just love that. Like the movie it's so me. It's the whole movie is so me. If you want to know who I am, it's that movie.
You're Sandra Bullock. Pretending to while be you were with sleeping. A man in a coma. Okay.
I do it. And she did it to save, you know, she saved his life. And then it was such a lovely group of people and she wanted to be a part of a family. And I just love that movie so much.
It's a lovely idea.
Yeah, While You're Sleeping.
Oh, here we go, Yvette Nicole Brand.
Okay, let's go.
Here we go. What's the sexiest film you've ever seen?
My gardener's here too, so I'm sorry if you hear a buzzing. It wasn't just because you asked me about the sexiest. I think love is sexy. I think monogamous love is sexy. I think people getting over their shit to find love is sexy. So I have two for this too. I will pick just one if I must.
Okay, but I want to hear the two.
The first is Ghost, because the fact that this man loved her in the afterlife, stayed to protect her in the afterlife, and they were hot together when they were alive, but just that love that he had for her, Ghost. And the second one is a movie called Love Jones, which was Nia Long and Lorenz Tate, and they fought to be together, and their chemistry was like combustible. They were just, the two of them together was amazing. And it was also a beautiful love story. They had to fight for it a little more, but so Ghost and Love Jones were sexy to me.
We're going to have Love Jones because it hasn't come up before.
Okay, sure.
I really like it.
Okay.
Now, Yvette Nicole Brown, I don't know how you'll feel about this, but there's a subcategory.
Yes.
The question is, troubling boners, worrying wide ones. And the question is, a film you found arousing that perhaps you thought, maybe I shouldn't have.
I'm going to go with Fight Club.
A, thank you for answering, and B, what a great answer.
Some people don't answer?
I've had three people turn that question down.
Really?
In horror.
Really?
Which always makes me think, well, you're up to something. You're,
there's
there.
Something really sinister. There's a sinister underbelly there. No, and this is now my reason why. I mean, the obvious, you know, was Brad Pitt in his best human physical form ever. So, yes. But the second reason I find it weirdly sexy and arousing is it's such a diatribe against capitalism. Like, that first, one of those first early scenes with Ed Norton walking through his house and it becomes an IKEA catalog and he's like buying stuff and he does this whole speech, or I don't remember if it's him or Brad, that does a speech like you're buying things to impress people. And, you know, it's so, it was such a microcosm of our consumerism and how we look at life and how grabbing the bag or I forget how people say it. I can't even think of the word, but it's something that getting the bag and hustling to get all these trinkets. And it's like, for what? For what? And the fact that that movie was about a fight club, but was bold enough to like stick a middle finger up at capitalism. That was sexy as hell. Fight Club.
Really good.
Fight Club.
Really good. Here we go. What is objectively the greatest film of all time?
This is not even objective. Anyone that disagrees with me on this needs to check their soul. And I mean, really have a long talk with themselves about how they are living their lives. The best film ever is It's a Wonderful Life.
You can have that.
Right? First of all, it's a little bit in there for everybody. Like there's a little eye candy in there. If you like looking at pretty girls or handsome men, that's in there. It's a morality tale. It's a fantasy film. It's a good guy makes good film. It's a everybody comes up from behind to prop up a wonderful soul film. It's got spirituality. It's got comedy. It's got drama. It's everything. And even it was from the 30s, even had a black woman in it. Come on. It's a perfect film.
It's really good. It's really dark. It's Wonderful Life, really dark. It's about suicide.
There are moments that are really dark, but I think that's life though.
Yeah.
In life, there are moments that are really dark. And how do you, like the idea, George Bailey, everything that could go wrong in his life went wrong. Every dream that he had was dashed. And he still got up every day and tried to live a life that blessed other people. And it got to the point where he realized that he was of more use not here. That life had beat down this lovely, wonderful man that badly. And then God himself had to intervene to bring him back from the brink to let him know life is still worth living and this is why. And it also...
These are all the people you touch.
All the people you touch. And I think that that is true for every single person. We only understand our lives in looking back, right? When you're in the midst of it, it's like looking at a painting too close, right? You see black and blue and red and yellow and it doesn't make any sense until you step back and go, oh my God, it's a masterpiece. And to have the masterpiece, you got to have some shadows and some darkness and some blacks and blues. You have to, because that's how you can see the vibrancy of the golds and the yellows and the pinks and the right. But when you're in the blue phase or the black phase, it feels like all is lost. And it's a reminder to just hang on one more day and to know that you have done more good than you know. And that's true for everyone.
And also you tell me, but I've had it. I've experienced it. And I've also heard, you know, whenever you speak to anyone who says to you, oh man, you know, 2 months ago, I was in such a dark place. I thought about ending it all. And you think, dear God, call me. Why didn't you call me? And you also think, I'd have been so sad.
Yeah, if you had.
But when you're in that dark place and you can't see that.
See your way out.
But no one's ever said that. I've never heard someone say that and gone, yeah, you probably should have. You
know no, because like it's because that's not the truth of it. Like I often tell people, and I think if I ever write a book, I'm going to do a chapter about this. We are going to survive everything but one thing. Every heartache, every up and down, every job we don't get, everything that we feel is going to destroy us. Every single one of those things does not destroy us. There is one thing for each of us that will be the end of us. And we spend our whole lives panicking about all these things. And it doesn't really matter until it's the one thing. And maybe it doesn't even matter then either, because I believe there's an afterlife and you get another shot or whatever. So it's like we twist ourselves into knots about things that always get better. They always do. I always feel like sometimes that the despair we feel is just a lack of memory. Because if we would take a moment, and I'm not talking to people that are clinically depressed, like that's a whole nother thing. And I know that is real. And I pray that anyone that is suffering with that will get the help that they need. But I'm saying those of us to just have those days where we're just like, nothing matters. What's the point? If you just would think back, you could find 20 things that were just as spirit killing as that. And you survived it. And the person that broke your heart, you look back and went, I'm glad I ain't with that person. No way. It always happens that way.
Yeah.
Always get on the other side of it and understand why it had to happen. Right. Even if you didn't like it, you're like, I hated that period of time. I hated working that job. I hated losing that job. But man, if I hadn't lost that job, I never would have got here. Or man, if I'd never taken that job, never would have met that person who ended up introducing me to. We all can do that mapping to find how our lives work. We just forget in the moment that it always gets better. You know, come on. My dog is trying. Come on. You can do it. There you go. See, that's what you got to tell yourself. You can do it. You just got to tell yourself you can do it.
Really good. Really good stuff. What's the film that you can or have watched the most over and over again?
So many. It's always a lot with me. I'm going to give you a few and you tell me which one you want me to expound on because you might have. Okay. I almost know which one you're going to pick because I know no one else has ever said it. Princess Bride.
Lovely.
Independence Day.
I fucking love it.
We have to do a movie night, Brett.
I love Independence
Day. We need to get one of those apps where we can watch a movie at the same time. I love Independence Day. Tootsie. Yes. And Adventures in Babysitting.
Oh, great shout. Well, I guess I want to hear more about Adventures in
Babysitting. I knew you were going to pick that one.
I know Independence Day is masterpiece.
I know.
Summer movies.
Have other people picked Independence Day ever?
I don't think it's come up a lot.
It's come up before,
It's one of the great summer films.
It is
Independence Day.
If I ever want to clean my house without hating that I have to clean my house, if I put on Independence Day, I will just start cleaning my house because there's something about that film. Well, one, I've seen it so many times that I know how it's going to end. I know the ride. Mm-hmm. And if I'm happen to be vacuuming, it's okay if I'm vacuuming during a scene because I can turn it off. And it'll be another scene that I really love. So yeah, that's that. Princess Bride and Adventures in Babysitting, I love just because they're perfect films. But aside from that, I know every single line in each one of them. I could literally do a one-person show with all the lines of Princess Bride and Adventures in Babysitting. But since we're going to do Adventures in Babysitting, if that's the one you want me to expound on, I will say, one, it came out around a time that I was a babysitter, was about to become a babysitter. Second, the adventures that she had were so like eye-opening. You got Vincent D'Onofrio, can't say his name, as Thor, and he just looked amazing. And he's like a chameleon when it comes to actors. Like every role he's ever been in, I'm like, that doesn't look like Vincent. Elizabeth Shue in one of her first performances, and she had perfect hair. And I love that she was a little chubby, like chubby by Hollywood standards, right? So everyone else was just always in films were always so real thin, and she was always just a little plump, but still totally thin, but just a little plump. And so as a plump kid myself, I was like, I saw myself in her. And I love that she was this suburban kid that kind of got badass when she had to. It's a delightful film. Delightful.
It really is.
Yeah.
I don't like to be negative. I don't think you do either. So we'll do it fairly quickly. What's the worst film you ever saw? You can have, it doesn't have to be because it was bad.
Film I have ever seen. And I blame the cast of Community that I saw it because they knew that I wouldn't like it. They all knew. They knew I wouldn't like it. And they encouraged me. Human Centipede.
Oh, wow.
Have you seen Human Centipede?
I've not seen all of it.
Yeah, I haven't seen all of it either.
I got the gist.
But just the gist of Human Centipede, just the gist of it. And I think that was probably the first and last time I allowed peer pressure to make me do something because they were all talking about it. And they're like, Yvette, you're the only one that hasn't seen it. You need to see it. And I was like, okay, I'm going to see it. And I was fully an adult. Like there was no reason that should have worked on me. And I sat down and watched that film. And I got about maybe 30 or 40 minutes in. It is the worst thing I've ever sat through. Those 40 minutes, I cannot get back. If you're listening to this and you've never seen Human Centipede, do not do it.
I just always think about the reality of acting in that is like, it's all well and good. I know it's not real, but you still have to have your
face in someone's butt.
in someone's butt for quite a lot of hours in a day.
A lot of hours.
The lights are on, it's hot, your face is in a butt.
And listen, I don't know that everybody chose not to eat chili or beans.
You don't
know.
You don't know how long the shoot was.
You don't know. You don't know.
People got hungry.
People just... Lunch.
The problem with lunch, we had to eat earlier.
And you have lunch and maybe it was chili one day and it was delicious. Mm-hmm. And you're one of the people that has to put your face in someone's butt after they had chili.
The director was like, I put most of the money on catering because I really care about food. I want you all to have a lovely meal.
To enjoy every day. Your meals.
Everyone had a four-course meal every day.
Human centipede.
And then went, pop your head back in the butt.
Human centipede. And it's the thing, even the person that was at the front of the line doesn't feel good about it. Because they know.
They're not having a great time. They're having a better time.
They're having a better time. But I wouldn't be able to be comfortable if I knew the six people behind me were not. I can't. I'm not built that way. I'm not built to enjoy myself when other people are suffering.
Mm-mm. Yeah. Mm-mm. What if the people behind were like, I'm loving this?
No one said that. Everybody that said yes to those, the behind roles needed to pay their rent. I'm sure of it. They have student loans or rent to pay. There's no one.
God, it's worrying, isn't it? I can't think. I wonder. I hope they're all right, those actors.
I want to now go back and figure out who they are and see if they've done anything since, because I feel like I would be so
trying. You don't see on trailers. No. It doesn't say like from the human centipede.
I think
Lorraine.
I think I would be so traumatized that I would never work again after Human Centipede. So I don't know that any of them have worked again in anything we would have seen. And forgive me if I'm wrong.
Let's send them light and love. Yeah. And I hope they're all
Meryl okay. Streep as the third person in the cinema. Nope, not Meryl. Not Meryl.
You were in comedy. You're very funny. What's the film that made you laugh the most?
I laugh at any film that stars Eddie Murphy. And of the films that star Eddie Murphy, if I had to pick one, I would go with Coming to America. Coming to America to this day. And I've seen it again. It's one of those, another film that I could say every line from. But I remember how groundbreaking it was. And the fact that when we found out that Eddie Murphy was playing the little Jewish man in the barbershop when the end credits rolled, I was like, done. I was done. And it was a great love story. And it celebrated, you know, Black excellence. And so many stars were in it. And, Arsenio Hall was wonderful. Mm. So I'm going to go with that.
It's really good.
It's a funny movie. And I will say runner up.
What's up?
Is Life with Eddie Murphy and Martin, which is really unsung. Life is unsung, Brett. People,
yeah, I love it.
There's a scene of Martin and Eddie in their bunks talking, and you can see them breaking in the scene. And the fact that them breaking at the foolishness of each other, the reason it stayed in is I'm sure there was no take they could have used where one of them didn't break, so they had to use a version of them breaking. And it's delightful to watch funny people making another funny person laugh.
Yeah, I love that. I really like that film.
It's a great film.
I don't quite understand why it wasn't beloved.
Yeah, it's kind of it's a sleeper. Like those that know. Yeah. I knew you'd know because every film I mentioned, you've known. Yeah.
Hey, look. Do 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 do. Welcome to the Patreon section.
Ooh, we made it.
You made it to the VIP. Wow.
I've never been in a VIP. I'm so excited.
Well, welcome. Look, I've pulled aside the velvet, right?
Thank you.
What do you think?
I think it's nice. What I love the most about the VIP section is the Muppet poster and the tiny door that appears to go nowhere behind you. I've wondered about this door since we did our Ted Lasso. Yeah. Where does that door lead?
It's scary, isn't it?
It is, because I thought when we did the Ted Lasso panel, I thought that there were little stairs under it. Like I thought that it was like an attic door and it was just that the perspective was off and that it was way in the back of the room. And now that I'm here, I realize that it's close. Are you going to open the door? Are you going to open the door? Have you ever opened the door?
I must never open the door.
Brett, can you DM me on Twitter?
I opened the door once and I had to do a lot of spells.
DM me on Twitter and tell me what's behind the door. And this is the thing. This is what I don't understand. Let me just say, I know this is your podcast. I don't want to take over. Why didn't you put the Muppet poster over the door? Why isn't it?
Because it's not quite.
It's a little wider.
And also, the people behind the door don't like it blocked.
Oh, my God. What's
behind? And by people, I mean beings.
What's behind the door? Brett, I'm not kidding. Please
tell me. Previous guests.
DM me and tell me what's behind the door. Okay. I'm sorry. I don't want to make this about the...
Now, Yvette Nicole Brown.
Yes.
There's a thing that happens in the Patreon section where the first thing you have to do is tell them a secret that you've never told anyone, and they will keep it.
This is really a secret that I have never told anyone. This is such a secret that I actually kept it from myself until probably a month ago. I think I may run for public office someday. I don't know what public office. It could be local alderman in my city, but the last few years in America have bothered me so much that I feel like the people that actually love people should be the people running for public office. I think that our government, wherever, whatever country or state you're in, your government should be filled with servant leaders, people that are making decisions for the good of other people and not for their own bottom line or for the pockets of their cronies. And so as I've watched so many really mean, horrible people make decisions, I think that one day I may. I didn't say I will, but I think that one day I may.
Please do. Can I tell you something? And I hope you don't. I worry that this will sound, I don't know what, but I mean this, and it's more, I just mean this as a respectful thing. You put up on Instagram an interview when Larry King died that you'd done on Larry King, and you were fucking amazing on it. And I did really think you talked about politics and you talked about Trump and you talked about the state. It was just after Trump had been elected. Yeah. And I was so blown away by everything you said, and partly because I thought I couldn't say the things you said. Not that I don't agree with the things you said, but I don't have that eloquence with it, the way that you expressed it all, the way how clear and how loving you were, even though you were talking about this very scary, difficult time.
Yeah.
And that you weren't just like, oh, fuck him. Like you were with love, you were talking very realistically about the problems and the fears that were attached to all these things. And I genuinely thought it was amazing. And I thought, I wish you were president. So I'm glad that you're saying this because I think you should.
That's very kind. I don't think that I would ever run for president because
Too late. You're on the books.
You know, the funny thing is I actually still believe that somebody that's really smart and knows a lot about all of that should be the one doing it. I will never understand how that horrible man was in charge of our lives for 4 years. But thank you for that. I just really believe that we're supposed to help each other. I really do. And I think that there's a way to do this without treating each other horribly. I just really do. And so, you know, one day it might happen. So that's my secret.
That's one of the great secrets we've had. It's such a simple idea that seems to have got waylaid a long time ago, where like public office is for the public.
It's for the public.
To help people.
You're a servant.
Not yourself.
Yeah, you're there to help people lead better lives. And you should only take the job if that is your goal, to help people.
Yeah. Really amazing. Mm-hmm. What is a film that changed your perspective on something?
There's a couple of choices here. I'm going to give you two and you pick which one you want us to stay with. One is All the President's Men, because it is such a testament to what two people, or just want to take one at a time, what one person fighting for good and truth can do and the change that they can make. That's one choice. Second choice is The Five Heartbeats by the great Robert Townsend. What I love about The Five Heartbeats, you like that movie?
I love that movie. You know, I love Hollywood Shuffle
too. Yeah, no, I think we talk about unsung. I think Robert Townsend is completely unsung.
Yeah, talk about unsung.
Totally unsung. The Five Heartbeats is the first and only film that my dad and I used to always go to movies together. Mm-hmm. I'm his caregiver now. He has dementia, sadly. And so I've been his caregiver for about 8 years now. But when I was like in junior high, me and my dad were each other's movie buddies. We would always go to movies together. And The Five Heartbeats is the first and only film that he and I paid to go see, watched, went back outside to pay again to go see. Now, I'm from Ohio, Cleveland. We would sit in a movie twice many times, but never, not my dad. This is what the teenagers would do. But the idea that me and my dad wanted Robert Townsend to have more of our money. We were like, we want to pay to see this again, because this one man created an entire world that made us feel something. The music was great. The Dells did all the music in it. The acting was great. One of the Nicholas brothers did all the dancing. Diane Carroll was in it. And it was it married me and my dad's musical taste, because my dad loved doo-wop and I loved R&B, and the Five Heartbeats was right in that sweet spot because it spanned such a long period of time in the lives of the Five Heartbeats. So that movie made me think that one man, one writer, director can create an entire world. And it changed my whole mind about what we could do and what Black people could do in the industry. So, yeah, it probably should be the Five Heartbeats.
That's fantastic. Yeah. I do feel like I was reading about, about Citizen Kane. I was reading about Citizen Kane because of Mank. I was reading a whole article about Mank and how Citizen Kane was kind of lost for many, many years. In my lifetime, it was always the greatest film of all time, according to all the lists. But there was 30 years where no one remembered it or talked about it, you know. I feel like that about Robert Townsend. At some point, it's going to come around and people will go like, oh, he was one of the greatest.
One of the greats. And
one of the great artists of our time.
And let me say this, one of the nicest men, I think, I've encountered. I run into Robert Townsend so randomly in LA. Like I was at my ATM getting money out and Robert Townsend was walking down the street. And every time I see him, and it's become like a gag now, I tell him the story about me and my dad every single time. Robert Townsend has heard that story like four or five times. And I ended up doing a project because his daughter is now acting. And I did a project with his daughter. And while we're in the hair and makeup trailer, her father calls her, Robert Townsend calls her to tell her how much he loves her, how proud he is of her. He hopes she has a great day. And then I said, that's Robert. I said, can I say hi? She turns the phone to me and then he gives me a pep talk. And Yvette, you know, you're great too. And I'm glad you guys are working together and I can't wait. Like, he's just a freaking love bug. He's never, this industry hasn't jaded him. He's still just lovely. He's lovely. And I hope one day that he is on the list of one of the greats along with other directors and writers, because he's just wonderful. Robert Townsend. Five Heartbeats.
Robert Townsend. What's the greatest opening to a film?
I am going to go, I have two, you pick. One is Carrie Ann Moss as Trinity in The Matrix. First of all, it's perfect because it shows her as a complete badass. Second, it completely explains to us what this world is. Like, once you see that sequence, you now know what they're fighting against, how difficult it is, how physically fit you have to be, because she is aerobically ready to go. All of that is encapsulated in those first few minutes of the film. So Matrix, the second one is Little Shop of Horrors. Because it is one of my favorite films. And then it's also when you get to hear Tashina Arnold and Tisha Campbell singing, and you get to, again, for the same reason I like the Matrix opening, it shows you the entire world. Like, you completely are immersed in it. You know about Audrey too. You know about Seymour. You're ready to take the ride after hearing one song at the beginning of that movie. So those are my two choices. See, it's hard to pick.
I'm gonna go with
which one you want. I know it's hard. It's hard. Might have to be a twofer, buddy.
Little Shop of Horrors, because it's got puppets.
What? It's really hard.
What's the greatest closing, ending, final sequence?
Okay, I have to look at my notes because I love so many. It's so hard to pick.
I'll choose one.
Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid.
Magnificent.
What I love about that one is that, I mean, we know, but we don't know.
Yeah.
Like,
And we don't want to know.
And we don't want to know. We don't want to know. They could have got away. They could have survived. Oh. And Black Panther, because it's so triumphant and so Black. Like, even the credit, like, I would have to say, if you had to pick one of the greatest credit sequences of a film, Kendrick Lamar coming in and just the way the music and the images are going at the end of that film, like, you leave out of there like Wakanda forever. I don't care if you're Black or not, you coming out like Wakanda forever. Black Panther is just a beast of an ending. The whole film is a beast, but that ending is just, it makes you feel like you can be somebody.
I think it's got to be that then.
Yeah.
Yvette Nicole Brown, what's your favorite film? Is it It's a Wonderful Life?
You know, that's hard. Look, I've picked two or three films for every single question. It's a Wonderful Life is one of my favorite films, but I'll tell you two others I love. All About Eve. And I'm going back to, Princess Bride.
Yeah.
Like, how do you pick between It's a Wonderful Life, All About Eve, and Princess Bride? How do you pick between those three? Like, one, All About Eve is probably one of the most well-written, taught, efficient films ever. Like, there's not a lot of actors in it. There's not a lot of sets. It's Black and white. Mm. And this story is told so perfectly, and it applies to everybody everywhere. We all know an Eve. Some people are an Eve. It's great. that's a great film. And then Princess Bride is just so many jokes, such a great love story. It's an adventure. It's hard to pick. And we already talked about what's great about It's a Wonderful Life. I probably would have to give it to Princess Bride by a nose, just because it's a film that has everything and it's so quotable. And no matter how many times you've seen it, as soon as you put it in, you're whatever age you were when you first saw it, you're right back in it. Yeah. So I'm going to go with Princess Bride. I'm sure other people have picked that a few thousand times, though.
That's okay. And Nicole Brown,
yeah,
you've been, I mean, I was expecting this to be great, but I would say this has been even better by a million. The day you turned 100, right? Mm-hmm. And you were with your husband and you were lying on your bed.
I finally found him. I found him, Brett.
Yeah. And he's lovely. He's actually lovely. He's very nice. Okay. And you were watching, you had one of those beds with like buttons that go up and down. You were watching the TV, and on the TV, there you saw it. It said Smuckers.
Smuckers. That made it to 100. With a name like Smuckers, it has to be good.
It says Smuckers. With a name like that, it has to be Yvette Nicole Brown's 100th birthday. And your husband turned to you and he clapped and you had a lovely meal and you watched The Princess Bride and then you had a cuddle and then you went to sleep.
And that's it.
And then that night you died.
I died.
And your husband got up. He was very sad. He knew it was about your time. And he called me up. He said, could you come over and sort this out? I said, yeah, of course I could, mate. So I come around, but he'd left the heating on. Very
in my body, I'm combusting in the house. I'm stinking up the joint. Why do I have to stink up the joint?
So I come upstairs and I'm like, man, you forgot to turn on, you should have put on the air conditioning because she's exploded. She's exploded. So there was a real mess in the room.
It
was
exploded, Brett.
Yeah, it was a long time he'd left the heating on. And so I brought a coffin, but there was just so much more than I was expecting I was going to have to deal with. getting bits off the wall, there's bits of like carpet stuck to you or so.
Bits of me. Okay.
Yeah. But I collected it all and I put it in the coffin, but it's just, with all due respect, it's a mess.
It's a mess.
And it's absolutely just jammed in there.
I mean, I was 100 too, so it was, even if you found me intact, it might have still been a mess. I don't know.
it was a mess. Yeah. And so I've smashed it all in, but there's very little room in this coffin. There's only enough room to slide one DVD in the side. And when you go to the other side, it's movie night every night. And one night it's your movie night. What film are you taking to show everyone in heaven when it's your movie night, Yvette Nicole Brown?
This is very self-serving. And initially I thought the question was, what am I going to be buried with? I didn't know that it was going to have to be what I show the Lord when I get there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're showing the Lord this.
But so the movie pressure. I chose, and I'm standing by it. A movie I chose is the movie I wrote called Always a Bridesmaid. Because the reason I wanted to be buried with it is it's a film that I wrote when I was a office temp, 20 years ago, and it got made and it's streaming on Netflix currently. By the time I'm 100, Netflix will be chips in our brain. But it's currently streaming on Netflix and it did really well, and it is my heart on film. And so it would make me very happy if when you move all the goo of me aside and slip in one DVD, it would make me happy if it's the one that I wrote and executive produced. So I'm going with Always a Bridesmaid. And fun fact for those that are in the Patron, it stars Javicia Leslie, who plays the new Batwoman on CW. So if you like your Batwoman, you can see her in a sweet romantic comedy.
That's a brilliant. And you can do a Q&A afterwards. Everyone will love that.
They'll love that. Talk all about the people that were, now 80. They would be 80 at the time.
Now, before we say goodbye, is there anything you would like to tell people to watch or to look out for or to listen to?
Oh.
Or anything?
Well, listen.
Of yours.
I'm in the Disney Plus camp and I have a wonderful kids game show called The Big Fib that airs on Disney Plus, and I also have a brand new show with John Stamos coming out sometime in the future. We're in COVID right now, so we don't know when it's coming out, but it's called Big Shot, and it's set in a girls, elite girls school, and I play the principal, and John plays the basketball coach. Big Shot. So Big Shot and Big Fib. So just remember Big and my name and Disney Plus, and you'll find me.
You have been a real treat, and I am grateful that I got to spend this time with you.
I've enjoyed it.
Thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you.
And you have a wonderful death.
Thanks, Brad.
You will be very popular up there. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Good night. So that was episode 137. Head over to patreon.com/Brett Goldstein for the video and any other extras you can find. Go to Apple Podcasts and give us a 5-star rating and write about the film that means the most to you and why. It's lovely to read and it does help numbers and it means Maureen can keep drinking craft beer. Thank you very much. Thank you for listening to this. Thank you to Yvette for doing the show. Thanks to Scroobius Pip and the Distraction Pieces Network. Thanks to Buddy Peace for producing it. Thanks to Acast for hosting it. Thanks to Adam Richardson for the graphics and Lisa Lydon for the photos. Come and join me next week for a recording of the special live show I did with the wonderful comedian James Gill from Always Be Comedy. It's a good one. So that is it for now. In the meantime, have a lovely week. And please, now more than ever, be excellent to each other.
Sometimes I dream of becoming an actor. Have you ever dreamt of becoming an actor? Maureen, what is it you think I do for a living? Never mind, sounds like you need the New York Film Academy. NYFA offers workshops, BFA and MFA degrees and summer camps in filmmaking, acting, journalism and more, online and on campuses across the globe. To make films alongside industry professionals, explore more at nyfa.edu. Thanks, Brett. Thank you, Maureen.
Maureen, your Canva presentation looks brilliant. Thanks, Brett. That's because I used AI-powered Canva presentations. I just described what I wanted and Canva presentations generated the perfect slides. You can even make a talking presentation for people to watch on their own time. Check this out. Recording. 101 Reasons Why Beaches is the Saddest Film Ever Made by your neighbour Maureen. Is it easy to use? If you can use a computer, you can nail your next work presentation with Canva Presentations at canva.com, designed for work. Oh, thanks, my neighbour Maureen. Yeah, thank you.